Good morning, everybody.
Yes, sir.
It's a short week this week.
Oh.
Are you excited?
I am over the moon. I am so happy.
Me too.
It's fantastic.
I do love this. I'm also getting the hang of being back on X. There's quite a lot that I'm still not used to. There's quite a lot that I'm kind of having to re-educate myself on. I almost feel like re-educate sounds like such a Maoist struggle session, you know, brainwashing thing. But
like you were caught using the wrong pronoun or something.
Right. I'm figuring my way, and I'm also figuring my way through like what to say about the show now that we've got the real network on one side of things and the podcast party on the other, and we're kind of separating them as businesses and they've got different roles to play and all the rest. But it is confusing, even to me.
Yeah.
It's like these are my children.
Yeah.
It's like when your kids walk into the room and you're like, are you, what's your name again?
Yeah. Number four, come here.
Now I know how parents feel when they kind of lose track of their kids. Jack Woodland is here, everybody, in case you haven't noticed.
Yes, sir.
Big ass chain.
Yes, I am. It's for the swag.
It's ever since you started hanging with taxi buses.
Yeah. They put me on game. Weirdly enough, you know how a lot of people, well, there is a lot of violence in the taxi industry.
Violence.
But.
Taxi violence.
But because I'm their friend now, you know what I mean? I'm kind of the safest person.
You're in with them.
Yes, I'm
with
you.
They like you. Yeah, I've got you.
They're amazing human beings. I mean, the taxi industry is absolutely fascinating.
It is. And let me tell you something. There's some hardworking people in that business.
Yep.
And we may sit on the outside and criticize them. And sometimes it's merited and justified. But I'll tell you what, they keep the economy going.
Yeah.
You got to give credit where it's due. South Africans will complain about them, but they're the only people who let you in traffic. And they are busy getting everybody to work.
They are.
As we speak, from 3 a.m., they're busy ferrying South Africans around to all the important places where they need to be to get stuff done.
Yep. I leave my house on Tuesday mornings at 4.
Yes.
And there's a taxi there ready, waiting.
Ready to make stuff happen.
Yep. And for whatever reason, it's weird. Like during the day, that's when they have a bit of a foul attitude. But at 4 in the morning, they're absolutely delightful. I don't know.
A foul attitude?
Yeah, they do. Sometimes. It happens. They're people
who
too.
Who doesn't have a foul attitude by the end of a long day? Oh my God. Yesterday, I was here early in the morning. We did the show. I had some meetings. I had some stuff to do. Then I went off and I kind of had a gap in the middle of the day. And I had a 4, 5, and 6 o'clock in the afternoon meeting. So by the time I eventually got home yesterday, I was screwed. I was just thinking, this public holiday situation couldn't come at a better time for me.
Yeah.
I walked into my house last night and I was like, just get through tomorrow and Wednesday and
you're done.
Thursday's a holiday.
Yeah.
You'll survive. I imagine
you're not the only person that feels that way. A lot of people have been waiting for a break.
Absolutely.
And truth be told, the past 2 weeks have been hectic on our end.
There's a lot going on. So thank you for your patience if you've been putting up with us and name changes and website changes and app changes. And I mean, yesterday we were fiddling around with the app and trying to get something started because it wasn't working properly in the morning. But it all will be revealed. And I mean, I'm trying to make it as simple as possible because actually, if you like this show and you're coming just for this show, nothing's changed.
Yeah.
It's exactly what you'd want it to be. If anything, there will be some positive and cosmetic changes in the next while. That doesn't mean I'm going for Botox. It means, means we're getting – we're trying to bring the show a little more visually up to date.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what will happen here, but nothing else. You don't have to worry. Mm. Nothing else is going to change.
And I mean, Cliff Central was at the forefront of podcasting in this country. And
spot on. We just have to keep evolving.
Yeah. If anyone's going to lead the charge in evolving, I think it should be us.
Right.
Makes sense.
And we're launching a bunch of other really cool things along the way too.
Yep.
And as for the podcast party, we had a hell of a week last week with the famous Douglas Murray.
Mm. What a man.
Yeah. I mean, listen. To just spend 10 minutes around a guy like that, you feel instantly like you are absorbing like a sponge because he's so clever.
Yeah, he is.
Don't you just get the impression immediately? Like there are definitely people who their brains just work differently to the rest of us.
Yeah, they do. And it actually makes you realize just how much more work you have to do. And it's an exciting thing to think about
right.
Truly, because it makes you realize that, firstly, you shouldn't be married to your opinions about anything.
Yeah, you should be willing to change them on the basis of any new evidence coming into your world.
And you also realize that there's a whole world of knowledge out there that you might have overlooked because you were too busy looking at something else. And all you need to do is have a chat with that man for about 5 to 10 minutes and, you know,
well,
you'll open up. I promise you, you'll open up.
Look, we've got a first attempt out here now with the podcast party for bringing out real thought leaders and real public thinkers. And we want to encourage more people in this country to start saying what's on their mind,
yeah.
to think out loud, to critically analyze the things that they regard as being true and important, figure out whether they really are. Because we are a young nation that is still coming to grips with a lot of what democracy, what representation, what elections, what the future of this country politically might look like.
Mm.
And as a result, it's incumbent on all of us, and particularly on people who are young and who are trying to figure out what the future might look like and trying to decide how they would like to represent themselves
yeah.
in that future. It's important for them to wrestle with ideas.
Because as we all know, if you don't study history, you're just bound to make the same mistakes. And I think we also need to start adopting the idea of failing forward. This country fails back a bit too much. A bit too much. And the best way to go about doing that, I think, you mentioned it earlier on, is critical thinking. Being able to sit in a room with people that don't necessarily share your opinions, but you're willing to engage in the conversation because you realize that there might be something to learn.
And it doesn't have to be hard work. It can be so much fun.
Yeah.
The real beauty of having not necessarily complicated and painful discussions, but truly thoughtful, interesting, novel conversations about things that you're learning almost every sentence of that conversation, someone is learning from the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those are the most stimulating possible occasions for you.
Yeah.
What are you going to learn from going over old territory and establishing your point of view with people who already know it. There's no interest there. So the point is, and I'm sorry, there's a long-winded way to get to it. We're going to be bringing a lot of other people from all over the world to South Africa so that they can contribute to our thinking
mm-hmm.
and improve the way that we come to grips with things.
Yep.
And we're going to take some of the best of South Africa international.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of what we're doing with the podcast party. You can follow us on all the social media and you will see that just yesterday we were getting quite a lot of attention. Douglas Murray put out the interview that I did with him and Dave Rubin, who's also a friend who's doing incredible work. He's been a broadcaster and an influencer, and I don't mean that in a negative sense because there's so many people who call themselves influencers.
Yeah.
But Dave Rubin really has influenced people's opinions online for some time.
Because his interactions are not on social media.
Yeah, like, correct.
He's not an Instagram influencer.
He's doing really, really impressive stuff. And Dave Rubin was one of the first people to launch a free speech platform. He very much said that he grew up in the kind of Hollywood leftist way of thinking, and he's changed his position on a number of things, and now you could consider him a bit of a contrarian.
Mm.
So go and take a look at what Dave Rubin said. He mentioned the interview that we did with Douglas Murray as part of his show that he did yesterday, which is cool because it means that, we're getting out there.
Yeah.
And we're reaching new audiences and bringing in new people. So I'm thrilled about that, and you can find out more just by following Podcast Party and by keeping it real here on The Real Network, where we do this show every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, man.
Cool. Congo Chris says, quite right, Congo. He says, the serious conversations are great, but just don't lose the fart gags.
Yeah, we can't lose that.
You will recall, Congo Chris, on this very show last week with Jack, we played the sound of a red hot ball of iron going into a jar of, petroleum jelly, or something.
Yeah.
Going as it went in, there will always be room for fart jokes.
Always.
We shall never surrender the fart jokes.
I actually hope I never become so cynical that farting is not funny anymore. I hope I never cross that line.
I'm with you.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? just getting mad. So why would you do that?
There are people who just don't find it funny.
They really are. And it's like, with all of the shit that happens in the world, you have to find a little ray of sunlight.
And something to just take less seriously than all this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with me because I parked my car yesterday. There was some rain last night or something, so it's washed most of it off. But the birds have decided when I park here at the office, fair game on my car. And it seems to me like, because I don't think about where I park usually. I don't consider that there are swarms of hardy-dars nesting in a tree. And these things have been dropping like kilograms of bird shit onto my car. And apparently, and we've discussed this on the show once before, a couple of years ago, that stuff is very dangerous for the paintwork on your car.
Yeah, it is.
Some of it you can't get rid of easily.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to it this morning, and thank God it looked better than last night because there was some rain overnight. But there's still like crusty bits, and I don't know what these things are eating.
Yep.
They're eating, I don't know, chemicals from some factory.
Whatever the hell it is.
It looks terrible.
It's absolutely terrible. In fact, like the having trees is always a good thing, but like the number of trees that are here are just home to a whole host of birds that do not give a damn about how you feel. It's like, oh, you took your car to the car wash yesterday. let's see. It's like they have a chat amongst themselves. Hey, do you want to play target practice?
Yeah.
That white car looks pretty cool.
And it's white, so it doesn't help. Slippery Pickle says it's corrosive. Yes, that is true. It is. I'm telling you, that stuff will eat the paint off your car.
Yes, it will.
If you've if you're one of those people who you like neatness, I was saying to Jack and to James, who's busy, I noticed that James and I hear Simpiwe is actually responsible for having tidied up the production office because it looked like a dog's breakfast.
Yeah, it was.
For the longest time. It's horrific. There was just cables everywhere and like computers that were switched off and on, and there's just stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
I think while Ryan was in charge of that office, it was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Not to badmouth Ryan now that he's in Ireland, but I mean, he's still drunk from St. Patrick's Day, so it wouldn't make a difference.
It wouldn't.
But they tidied it up. And similarly, there are people who keep their cars immaculately clean. I try to. I really do try it. The outside, I obviously can't do anything with these birds.
Yep.
The inside of the car I like to keep clean.
Yeah.
But man, you look inside some people's cars. You know, if you park next to someone at a shop or at an office park when you're going in for a meeting, and you just get out of your door and you're like, whoa.
It's like, what exploded in there?
There are fast food packets everywhere.
Oh my goodness.
Tissues, open boxes. It's like, what are these people doing? Are they living in their cars?
It's crazy. And I look, I might get a lot of flack for this, but like women keep the most disorganized cars.
Ooh, here we
on
go.
Earth.
You said women. Now, now you know what's going to happen, right? Oh, I saw this thing. Just let me read this to you quickly because this is so on the nose for what you're saying now.
Seriously, like. It's just
be careful because you know what's going to happen. And you don't have a go at women. Who do you think you are? So here, this is funny as hell. Someone posted this to me, and I don't know if I should repost it because then, you know, a lot of people not going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
This
guy says, the average height for women is 5'4".
Okay.
Then some woman goes, yeah, but I'm 5'8", though. He goes, this is all arguments with women.
Yeah.
And then after posting it, the first woman to comment goes, I'm a woman and I don't do this though.
Wow.
So, ladies, I am not looking for a fight here. But when a guy says the average blah, blah, blah for women, that doesn't mean you have to say how you're not the average.
Yeah.
And that isn't an argument. That the average still stands.
Do they know what the word average means?
Don't say they, because these women are going to get upset with you.
You know what? I actually feel like being roasted today, so let them.
Have you
please.
Ever? Okay. Have you ever sat with? Let's say it's a woman you really like. You are prejudiced in her favor,
right?
And you say something like, "Oh, you know, there are a lot of people don't like reading fiction," and she goes, "I like reading fiction, though." You're like, hmm. We weren't talking about that. I thought it might be an interesting conversation to talk about, you know, what people read, not what you read and how you break the rule.
Yeah. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten into trouble with a girl that I was dating, and I'll text like, you know what, I'm just not in the mood for anyone. And then she hears, I'm not in the mood for you.
It immediately becomes a me.
Yeah.
Me, 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 me.
And yeah. I mean, look.
And guys also, listen, guys are the same in a lot of conversations. They will also make it me, 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 me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we're, you know, on average, there's that word again.
Uh-oh.
Men are typically a lot sillier than women. You know what I mean? And I think we find it a lot easier to laugh at ourselves and one another.
I think it's also because guys just don't. If guys are talking to guys, they don't tolerate sensitivity as much.
Yeah, yeah, no.
So if a guy says, "Oh, you know, I was driving the other day and a taxi driver, blah blah blah," a guy's not immediately going to go, "Oh, that never happens to me because."
Yeah.
A guy's going to go, "You idiot."
Yes.
Therefore, men have an inbuilt defense mechanism during conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know the other guys are going to take the piss out of them.
Yeah.
Whereas women are expecting a warm reception and are horrified when they don't get it.
Yeah. But I mean, even the studies that they've done on kids and whatnot and how girls and boys play, our rules are completely different. Like, we just go about life differently.
And by the way, if in case there's a woman somewhere who's upset, I could see Leanne isn't. She says, "Jack, but I am silly and I'm a woman, you see."
Congratulations.
Yeah, but you're making the same point as we are. And I know you're being sarcastic, Leanne. I get you. But
yeah.
I mean, Congo Chris says, the average woman will say, "But not me," even though the statement does apply. They communicate feelings, not facts. And everything becomes personal as opposed to general.
Mm-hmm.
That's why terms like, and I hate to bring this up because it's such a sensitive thing for so many people, but terms like lived experience are massively important to women and not important at all to men.
Not that much, no.
Guys will look at statistics and they'll be totally unemotional about them.
Yeah.
Oh, 20% of people want to vote for
UDM.
UDM. They're like, okay, that's interesting. With women, it's like, yeah, but I wouldn't.
Okay.
And I'm not saying all women don't get upset with us,
mm-hmm.
but that's what happens a lot of the time.
It does. But listen, we love you nonetheless. We love you because
we wouldn't want it any other way.
No other way. No other way.
And this is part of the reason that we're intrigued with each other, men and women, is because there's this difference.
Yeah. Let these LGBTQI people.
Let's not bring them into this. They didn't ask for a fight
let's
with
leave
you.
It. Okay,
they didn't look for a fight with you this morning, as my producer Tabo Mondisani used to say, "Don't fight with me, I'm not fighting with you."
Yeah.
So there are some interesting comments here about people and the dirty state of their cars.
Mm-hmm.
So Huge Reaction says, "I judge people by the state of their car, not the model, more the cleanliness. Have some self-respect, man." Well, this is a good point, because it isn't like the people who drive the expensive cars keep them clean.
Mm-mm.
Sometimes the people in the very expensive cars, these 2-3 million rand cars, you look inside and it does look like someone had a fight in there.
Yep.
And then you drive past someone who's got a cheap little car, but it is immaculately clean. And you're like, well, I can respect that.
Yeah.
Right? So it actually, people with kids have dirty car interiors, says Mapelo. That is, having seen the state of my brother and my sister-in-law's cars, especially when their kids were little, like toddler,
mm-hmm.
little,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's totally true. That is absolutely
true. It's par for the course.
And you can't blame the parents, because no matter how good they are at disciplining their kids, kids spill shit in the car.
Yep.
Kids leave stuff lying in the car. They forget things in the car. Kids have no respect for their environment. Even if you beat them,
mm-hmm.
they will still treat the thing like, you know, rubbish.
Yeah, I mean, the kids don't understand how things come into life, essentially. So they don't know what work means. They don't know why you should keep certain things. But I mean, you know.
No understanding.
Yeah, but they're kids. It's okay.
Just Milan says, I get that same edgy feeling when take-a-lot drivers come past with a small hatchback filled with boxes. I saw this yesterday. There was a delivery being made at the gate of an office park. And the back of this guy's little, like, Toyota Taz was piled to the roof.
Yeah.
With boxes. I don't know. He couldn't see out of the back window. That's for sure.
That's for sure, yeah.
But this guy was working,
mm-hmm.
which I respect.
Yep.
But you could just see, like, there's a lot of crap in that car.
Yeah, there is.
And I wonder how many of those boxes get lost along the way. That's all I'm saying.
Yep.
Jack sounds so cool, but then you switch the video and it's apparent that he's a turbo nerd. I know, because I'm one.
Mm.
I think he's complimenting you.
It sounds like a compliment.
Yeah, Carl. Thank you, Carl.
As I quietly Google what turbo nerd means.
Well, it doesn't mean you're stupid, which is a
definitely
compliment.
Definitely not. Yeah.
A dirty inside of a car is a disorganized person and they will be untidy. Okay, I think that's about right, Francis. Again, you're allowed to judge people by the environment that they create for themselves.
Yeah.
Which is, again, why the saying, cleanliness is next to godliness.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from.
Mm. And then you find people saying things like, no, it's just organized chaos. You're like, sorry.
No, I'm afraid I cannot share a space with a disorganized, untidy.
Mm.
No, let's not say that it's grubby. Let's not say it's like a messy place, leave food containers lying around, or, you know, that it's sticky surfaces, or
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not a person who is
filthy.
It's a person who's just disordered.
Yeah.
They have piles of stuff all over the place, and I can't do that. You can have, for example, I will have a pile of books, but they will be neatly stacked,
mm-hmm.
and I'll know that this pile is for reading, this pile is for putting away, this pile is to be decided, for example.
Yeah.
And there will be a system. If you throw me into a room where everything is just all over the place and you say to me you have to be here for a day or two, it will be sorted out by the time you come back.
Yeah.
Even if you come back in an hour, I will have everything organized.
Yeah.
It might not be organized the way that you would want it. And this is where people who are disordered
will show up and be like, why would you put it there?
I have a system, they say. I always say to you, I have a system. Mm. I know where everything is.
Yeah.
No, you don't. You are muddling your way through this and you will spend a lot of your time trying to figure out what's going on around you. Whereas
yep.
I will know if I go to the file and I go to B, I will find the bond for
mm-hmm.
the house.
Mm-hmm.
You will not.
Yeah.
You have a stack of papers and you will go through those papers for 6 hours trying to find the thing. Don't tell me you're organized.
And more often than not, you're going to stumble across something that you in the moment find interesting and you get distracted for a good 15 minutes and then go back to what you were looking for originally.
You can ask anyone in this office, if I have a document and they ask for it, they will be able to get it from me almost instantly.
Yeah.
I will have it ready. There are very few occasions, like when your email goes down or something like that,
mm-hmm.
where I don't have the thing you ask for.
Yeah.
And if anybody has any evidence to the contrary, bring it. I am pretty sure of my record in this respect.
Someone please bring it.
Slippery Pickle says, people who throw trash out of the window have clean cars. At least when I see someone with trash in the car, I know they're not throwing it in the gutter. That's a good point, but then they must also, when they get home,
take it out of the car and put it in the trash
can. Take one of those black rubbish bags and just throw this shit in there.
Yeah, I mean,
you know how nice it is to get into a car that isn't piled window high with rubbish.
Just stepping into clean places, period, is just amazing. Like, I get a lot of anxiety when, like, my room is a complete and utter mess. And I'm not going to sit here and say that it never gets into a mess. Sometimes the world can be a bit crazy and I get a little distracted. But when I walk in and I realize, oh my God, everything is up in the air, I immediately start packing up. Like I can't do it. Even with my outfits, I would much rather have something laid out the night before. That way I don't have to waste time in the morning trying to fiddle through my stuff, trying to figure out what to wear. It just saves me a whole lot of time.
I usually put it out the night before.
Yep.
Unless I mean, there's, you know, sometimes you get distracted and you have too much to do.
True.
But usually the night before. Mapelo says, people with dirty work computers with a sticky keyboard and mouse. Okay, that is just. Yeah. And people, because everybody uses laptops now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, most people are working on laptops. They're not working on desktop computers. I mean, it's not the rule, but there's a lot more.
Laptops around.
Yeah. In corporate South Africa, people have a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have the screen full of the fingerprints.
Oi.
I don't know. I just have to clean the thing.
Yeah.
Whether it's at home or at the office, I've got to spray a little spray and a little cloth.
Mm-hmm.
And I clean the stuff. So much so that I now clean other people's laptops in the office.
You're starting to sound like a germaphobe.
Listen. You don't want to go and don't dig too deep here. You'll be disappointed. Gareth, you must be an auditor's dream. I have very good filing. I might have a terrible personality. I might be difficult to get along with. I might be sometimes a little bit ornery,
mm-hmm.
but I have good filing.
Okay.
That should make up for it.
Mm.
Fire Monkey says, when I was studying, I remember observing women students that had clean cars in general would have messier rooms. Those that had cleaner rooms would have messier cars.
Mm.
Hmm.
Do
you think there's a correlation, or is that just Fire Monkey's observation?
I think there could be something there, but I think I'll take it a step further. I think women that have messy handbags have messy cars. Like, if you've ever had the opportunity to look in a woman's handbag and things are all over the place, I'm willing to bet my last rand that her car looks exactly the same.
That's so bad.
How is it bad?
No. Why it's bad is because we're opening up such a can of worms here. Women and handbags, some people are so sensitive about this.
Yeah.
I know ladies who just will not let anyone look in their handbag because they just know there's a mess.
Yeah.
And they're slightly embarrassed about it, but they're the only ones who dig around in there.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's some women, the handbag's only this big. It's as big as one of those there's little fanny pack things.
That
a lot of overweight people wear when they go to a flea market.
Yeah.
That's the only way I could put it. So a handbag that big.
Mm-hmm.
But they contain everything. Like Mary Poppins. You reach into that bag and pull out a ladder.
It's crazy. It's like Inspector Gadget in a bag.
Right. And somehow, and then they rummage. I just have to get something out of my bag. I'm just getting my lipstick. They'll go in there. They'll be elbow deep in the bag.
Mm.
It's a tiny little bag. They'll be rummaging around in there for like 5 minutes straight.
Yeah.
Trying to find this lipstick that they went in for.
Yeah.
And they'll be unpacking, and there's a pile of stuff on the table that's being, you know, how do you get all of that into the bag?
Yeah. And then whenever they rummage through it, you hear these weird sounds as well. It's like crinkling and popping and all of this stuff. You're like, oh my God, I do not want to see what's in their bag. It's absolutely insane. And some of the things that women pull out of their handbags is absolutely, like, it's unbelievable. There was this one occasion, my friends and I were at Opikopi. And while we were there, a friend of mine has got a problem with sinuses. And as you know, at Opikopi, like, there's dust all over
Jesus,
the place.
What a horrible place to have that problem.
And from nowhere, this woman just showed up like Superwoman. Like, she pulled out
a whole pharmacy in there.
An entire pharmacy. Like, okay, this is for pain. This is for your nose. This is for this. If your eyes start watering, here's some eye drops. I'm like, oh my God.
Right.
Excuse me, Clicks. What's going on? Like, I don't know if Opikopi was sponsored by Clicks. Who is this woman?
Great. That is
it's
so great.
Insane. It is insane.
I'm not going to criticize all women. Some women are so unbelievable that they can pull out like antihistamines and headache tablets, stomach stuff, and
EpiPens.
Like anything you need is in there.
Yep.
And I understand, and someone in the comments said this, you mustn't give women a hard time about handbags because they're not allowed to have pockets by order of the fashion police. It's Congo Chris. It's a very good point.
That is a good point.
Good point. So the handbag, I mean, it is an incredible thing. People wondered for years what the queen used to have in her handbag because she'd always carry the handbag around, but she doesn't have money because she doesn't need money.
Mm-hmm.
You were wondering what was in there, maybe tissues, makeup, who knows? But it turns out that some women have screwdrivers, spanners.
Yeah.
Hammers and nails.
Yep.
There's a whole room of stuff in there. You could go in there and you'd disappear for a month. And you'd be able to come out with whatever you're looking
crazy.
For.
Crazy.
Unbelievable. Hand sanitizer, still a good idea, according to Durban Dope.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very People true. Are gross, says B. I used to have to move my friend's car, bottles and tissues for days, and a cereal bowl, still with milk and bits of food. I was shook. That is disgusting.
That is actually disgusting.
Yeah.
It's pretty disgusting.
Vuisego says, do women have messy handbags? Is that a thing? You are very observant, bro.
But listen.
I think the question is for you because you were saying that some...
There are far more women than men in my family, okay?
Right.
And on multiple occasions I've been sent, yo, please go grab this from inside my bag. And I get there and I just grab the bag and give it to her. Like, I am not going in there.
No. But it's very rude. You should never dig in any woman's handbag.
Not at all. Even like, unless you have been given the express instruction to go jump in there. But just generally, like you, and these women, honestly speaking, like you'll come across one of these bags and someone will ask you, please hand me my bag. And you lift it and you're like, you've been carrying this 5 kilogram stone everywhere. Like, what is inside this bag?
I don't even know how we got onto this because we've now opened a hornet's nest of stuff here. but this is an interesting point. Sianda says, I once came across a rotting apple core while looking for change in my sister's handbag.
Oh my goodness.
Some horror stories here.
Yeah.
I have a light in my bag to help me find stuff. See, Wendy even has a torch.
Yep.
Conrad says, it's a sign of a disciplined individual and a good upbringing. I was in boarding school and the army. I was fortunate enough to have it drilled into me.
Well, yes, sir.
Good for you, Conrad. You know what? You're our type of guy.
Yeah.
Lucky says, dildos are always in the bag. Really? Really? You have to take those to the office? I don't think so. Not always.
Lucky's letting his imagination run wild at this
Lucky's
point.
Lucky's clearly never been in that many handbags.
Mm-hmm. Lucky, I feel like you just exposed something that you shouldn't have.
Anna Marie says, husbands complain the wife's handbag is so big until they have a headache and they need a grandpa.
True.
Then they're grateful.
Yeah.
Polyfiller has a tape measure.
Ooh.
Polyfiller. I like that. It's a good name. Has a tape measure in the handbag.
Mm.
My wife has my balls in her handbag, says Baka.
Ah.
Nice. Okay.
Well, hey, at least you know where they are.
And then we've got an important, serious question here from Christian, who has an interesting bit of info for us. Apparently, the ANC wants International Relations and Cooperation Minister Naledi Pandor to be the candidate for Western Cape Premier. Did you know this?
No, I did not.
That's interesting, Christian. Thank you for bringing us back to reality.
Yeah.
Out of the handbag into the fire.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this. I wonder if that would be a good or a bad thing. I suppose the thinking there is, because she's been so vocal in the last couple of months about Palestine, that she would curry favor with the Muslim voters in the Western Cape. You know, again, you can always figure out, like, the ANC is not a complicated thing.
No.
You've got quite a lot of very, very basic thinkers in that party.
Mm-hmm.
So they put two and two together, like, there are a lot of colored Muslim voters in the Western Cape, and because they're obsessed with demography, because they still, so many of them are like apartheid is like the biggest influence on their whole way of understanding the world.
Yeah.
Which would make Favut very proud and makes me a little bit sad for them.
True.
But they would immediately go, well, the demographics are coloured Western Cape Muslim, they would vote Naledi because she stood up for Palestine. And maybe they're right. Maybe they have a point. If people are that facile that that would be the way that they would vote just because of one issue, you get single issue voters in the world.
The point is a little blunt, but it's a point nonetheless.
So if that's true, then that's the reason, clearly.
Yeah. And the like the whole 350 becoming 370.
Yeah, that's another big thing that they're doing. It's like we'll throw in an extra 20 rand. You know...
Meanwhile, the rest of us are going to have to foot the bill for it, which is actually what pisses me off. I don't know. You know, sometimes when I hear some of these decisions that are brought forward by the ANC, I genuinely ask myself if the thought process was something that was... was it a back and forth? Was there a sounding board? Did anyone come up with counter ideas or whatnot? Because when they roll some of these things out and then you find out that it's going to cost an extra 2.2 billion to taxpayers, do they simply not care or is it just, you know what, we'll get the votes.
I think it's so cynical. It's really just a ploy. And because the ANC looks down on poor people.
Yeah.
And on unemployed people, and on people who don't have an education, because they do look down on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they treat them with such contempt, and their policies do no favors to those people. You can see that to them, cynical ploy for votes. Oof, we need some votes. Why don't we offer these already destitute people who are dependent on 350 rand a month.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how bad that is.
Yeah, it's awful.
In other words, these people's conditions are so bad that their life is only made better by 350 rand a month. Most people, I don't know if we could survive 350 rand a week, let alone a day. But the ANC goes, well, I know what we do with those people. If we throw in an extra 20 rand, because they're so desperate, then they'll go, oh, thank you, ANC.
These guys are doing the right thing.
That is the level of cynicism that we're dealing with. And you know what? They, again, just like with the Naledi in the Western Cape thing, they may be right. There may be people so down and out that their entire thought process could be shifted by 20 rand.
I think this...
I mean, it's no different to offering people a food package or a T-shirt, which we know is a big thing in this country. You do that and you could sometimes win that person for the next 4 or 5 years.
And I think there's a bit of hero worshipping in there as well. A lot of our parents who felt the brunt of apartheid realized that in 1994... Nelson Mandela was the person that was going to usher in this new world that a lot of people hadn't seen before. And that's what a lot of us were raised on. So the ANC at this point in time is on a pedestal that I'm not sure too many people want to take it off of, no matter how real the consequences of their actions might be. And it's become so simplistic in a lot of people's minds. Like, look, we are not going to vote for anything else other than the ANC because they brought us out of apartheid. They gave us freedom. I mean, we got to see the World Cup in our country and all of these things. You know what I mean? And it's very difficult to... They've got this demigod status in a lot of people's minds. And to remove people... Well, to remove the ANC from that demigod level in a lot of people's minds is not something that's going to happen. They're just not going to budge. I was actually thinking about it yesterday and it scared the living shit out of me because there's a real possibility, even though the polls might say whatever.
Which polls, yeah.
You know, there is a real, genuine possibility that the ANC will at least get 50% of the vote.
It could happen again.
It genuinely could happen again.
Well, I just want to say to everybody who's new to the show this morning, everybody who's joining us for the first time, like and subscribe, and I can promise you there'll be a whole lot more of this. You can also tell us what is interesting to you, what you want us to talk about, who you want us to get on the show. We want to hear from you, so you can definitely do that. Just go and if you're watching us on YouTube for the first time today, then like and subscribe. Add your voice to the many thousands of South Africans who get to speak freely on this platform. get to be a part of the conversation. We will get to JJ Cornish in a little bit. Something we do every second Tuesday is African analysis. We get to tap into JJ's very wide-ranging experience on the continent.
Yeah.
He's been to, a majority of African countries, and certainly a couple that I will never go to and that I've never been, I've never even thought about going to before. I mean, I'm fascinated by some of the places on this continent. He knows a hell of a lot about it, and we check in with him every 2 weeks, courtesy of the Johannesburg Business School, who, of course, are doing amazing things to get Africa moving forward and to help many graduates to take their place in the business world in Africa. And there's so much here on this continent that we can do. So let's not always focus on the politicians. Let's also focus on the business people and those people who are learning more every day about the continent and figuring out ways to make it a better place.
Yep.
We'll get to that in just a short while. I do have to throw this in quickly because we won't get to it now, but we may get to it just after. Is this Dr. Nandi being beaten up in the Kroonstad Correctional Center? Did you see the story?
Yes, I did.
What are you, any top of mind comments there with Dr. Nandipa? Because everybody was talking about how the Thabo Bester Dr. Nandipa case against Showmax to try and stop the story coming out.
Yeah,
the documentary.
Yeah.
That failed horribly.
Yeah. Much to the delight of millions of South Africans, by the way.
Well, because people care about the story.
Yeah.
So when you heard that she was being beaten up in jail, what did you think?
Well, I thought the locale was perfect, right? Like, if you're going to get your ass whipped, behind bars kind of sounds like the best place to do it, right? But at the same time, it's... In my mind, it's like, okay, there's a lot of people that are behind bars. A lot of people get beaten, raped, and all of this stuff. But because her story was headline news, now we have to hear about it. And on some level, there's a lot of people that feel a lot of sympathy towards her. Like, oh my God, that shouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
It also, I am also keeping in mind the fact that she is a very beautiful woman. She's a very attractive young lady. And not too many people want to see attractive people get beat.
But if she was ugly, we wouldn't really even...
No one would care.
No, sadly.
Like a lot of people like, you can't get any worse.
Yeah,
like,
sorry.
You were born like that.
That is the truest thing. It's like if Oscar Pistorius had shot through the door and there was a very ugly woman on the other side.
Yeah.
Again, like...
People would be like, ish.
I'm afraid that's just how it is.
Yeah, it is. And, you know,
it's
pretty...
We didn't make the rules.
No, pretty privilege is a real thing.
It's a real thing.
It's a very real thing. And
people,
you know,
care about Dr. Nandi being beaten up because she's...
Yeah, it's like, why would you beat such a pretty lady? It's like, well,
she is
in prison, guys. Like, let's not forget that.
It's a serious allegation, according to the Department of Correctional Services. They're saying it's just allegations at this time.
Oh, it's alleged.
They say an investigation is underway. But apparently the lawyer of Nandipa says that one of the attackers was a sangoma and the other was a mentally ill inmate.
Why do we care? Like,
well,
what does that have to do with anything?
I think it's interesting that a sangoma and a crazy person attacked Dr. Nandi. I do think that makes it a little more interesting.
Like, no. I genuinely don't care. It was just all over the news. There was no way I could, you know, skip it. But, like, I couldn't be bothered.
Moonchild says she was taken to the prison doctor, a real one, and they could find no injuries. It's a lot of bullshit. Well, who knows? Who knows?
I mean, Leah, you know, on a human level, if she was beaten, I'm sorry. But like...
Of course.
As far as...
You don't want people...
Like,
listen, our prisons are horrible enough, even if you aren't beaten.
Right.
Food is terrible. Conditions are terrible. It's just like a big black hole. No one knows what happens in there. Once people go into that system, there's no guarantee that they'll even come out. If they do come out, they'll probably come out worse than they went in.
Yep.
It's horrible. I have seen the inside of prisons because we've done shows from there. It's a very, very scary place to go. I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But criminals have put themselves in there, had nothing to do with me. I'm not the one who decides how it should be.
Yep.
Obviously, I would prefer if our prisons were places where people could improve. They could come out on the other side and have... learned something, have rehabilitated themselves, become an asset to society.
And be reintegrated without too many concerns about whether or not they're going to do something stupid.
But you know what? I'd like the economy to grow.
Yep.
I'd like to have a government that wasn't corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like unicorns. I'd like rainbows. I'd like pots of gold on every street corner.
Mm-hmm. But
I'd
live in the real world. See?
So, I mean, there's no guarantee any of this stuff. Let us turn our attention to Africa Analysis now. This is an opportunity for us every couple of days that we get to check in with JJ Cornish. It is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, where we look at what's happening around the African continent. Here is none other than JJ Cornish. Good morning, sir. Are you back in South Africa?
Bonjour to you. I most certainly am. In fact, I'm in the Lowveld. I'm on the verge of the Kruger Park at a camp here.
My
daughter from Sweden is out with me, so we're showing them the bush. Well, showing my grandchildren.
Very good.
We had a baboon walk into our house last night and attempt to get our food, which rather traumatized everybody. But
well, that's one of the things that could happen on this lovely continent of ours. Mm-hmm. We still live in proximity to the wild world. But you got back from Libya, where you were just a short no, sorry, Algeria, where you
Algeria.
Where you were a short while ago, JJ. Apparently, you had a very interesting return flight from Algeria.
Well, it took forever. You know, they flew me over there to cover a summit meeting, business class and the direct flight, and then they cancelled the return flight. Sod's law, I suppose you call it. And that's not, I don't think I'm speaking Arabic when I say that. But anyway, they flew me via Istanbul. I mean, it's not a scary airport at all. I mean, it's an impressive airport.
Very good.
Turkish Airlines were very good too. So it was, but it did take forever, 10-hour layover. And that can really drag out a little, can't it?
Mm-hmm.
It can. So JJ, let's look at what's going on in other news around the continent. First of all, Somalia, which we know is a haven for and a very big area of concern when it comes to piracy. It continues to be. We know that the Houthis have been a massive problem in the Yemeni area on the south of the Arabian Peninsula, which obviously is across the Gulf from Somalia. But Somalia has been a hotbed of this kind of thing for the longest time. And now apparently an Indian Navy ship has had to come in and rescue a ship that was pirated by the Somalians.
A couple of elements there. Of course, Somalia was the place for piracy. It did move across to the Gulf around Nigeria at one point, and it became even worse there. But so bad was Somalia that the NATO actually put naval forces in there to stop it. And there's been nothing really serious happening there since 2017. But then they took a MV Ruin, a motor ship the other day. In fact, back in December, and they've been holding that with its crew of 35, and the Indian Navy has stepped in and rescued the crew, of 17, 35 pirates who surrendered and have been held. Hmm. Now, a Bangladeshi vessel, MV Abdullah, it was held last week. And these same Indians and some Europeans are saying, we'll rescue them for you. There's a crew there of 34. And the Bangladeshis are saying, no, you don't even think about it. We put the safety of the crew at priority here, and you're not going to do that. So we wait to see. But what's this going to mean? That does mean that the naval forces have been redeployed around the Red Sea to hit at the Houthis. And apparently some Americans took a huge number of armaments and missiles and things. They captured them yesterday. So they're making some progress there. But those Houthi rebels out of Yemen, they haven't managed to beat them into submission yet. So if you are planning to take the catamaran, and I'll lend it to you this weekend, don't go up that way to the Horn. Head the other way. Even... What the hell? Go to the Antarctic, man.
All right, so not the best place to go for a holiday at the moment. Now, what about, you know, we constantly have these hostile activities happening, governments overthrown and all kinds of other things. And the AU has been kind of lackluster in being able to stop military coups, presidents being displaced, armed conflicts where one person is put in top and the other is thrown out. Why is the AU taking a tougher stance now, and can we believe them?
Because for the very reason that this has become the sort of coup center of the world. They've had all the Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, Guinea, all of that in recent years. And the AU has done what it can, what any sort of multilateral organization can do. It red cards any unconstitutional change of government. And that member of the AU cannot participate in or cannot vote. And but that has upset many. For example, the regional group, ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, when the coups happened in Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, they said, that's enough. We will step in militarily and make you restore constitutionality. And then somebody said, yeah, great idea. Have you thought who's actually going to pay for that? And they said, oh, look, we'll come back to you on this one. And then those three countries decided, well, if you're going to kick us out or sanction us, we're actually leaving. So, you know, there's an absolute mishmash, a real mess in that part of the world. But the AU has now suddenly said, we're not putting up with military takeovers. Peace, democracy is absolutely essential for development. Now, as we look at the countries I've just mentioned, Niger has ended its military relationship with the U.S. Niger was a friendly country to the West, and now it's changed around. Burkina Faso, according to analysts, has become a sort of a test case or a laboratory for the Russians. And the Russians already have Wagner mercenaries in the Central African Republic, and they're starting to move them into Burkina Faso. So that's not a country that's coming round. But in every case, there's been the secessionists and there's been the jihadis, and they've not been able to control them. And certainly the French, when they try to run that part or to control that part of the world better, they brought the countries together to form an alliance. But they went over the top in the sense that they believed any problem involving jihadis had to be sorted out militarily. And you can't do that. Essentially, many of these young men become jihadis because there's just no work. There's nothing else to do to sustain them. So, you know, it's very interesting. Interesting that the Niger thing happened shortly after a visit by the Assistant Secretary of State Molly Rhee and General Michael Langley, who is the head of the AFRICOM, African Command in Africa, the U.S. Africa Command in Africa. And they visited there thinking they could try to move Niger back into Ghana, and Niger said, well, I have nothing more to do with you, United States. So yeah. It really is a very, very troublesome, certainly for the West at this time.
You know, listening to JJ now, I actually start questioning the utility of the AU. Like, they don't have teeth. They can't actually put into action a lot of things that whatever resolutions they might come up with. But JJ, there's a very interesting story that we heard about. Like, WhatsApp and Malawi women being somehow, Malawi woman being saved using WhatsApp, that sounds so strange to me.
That was very interesting. But, you know, you're starting with me. And I know, I see Gareth wouldn't even do it. I mean, hitting at my support for multilateral organizations. And you know, since I was a correspondent to the United Nations, I believe very firmly in them. Yeah. I know that they're imperfect. I know that they lack teeth in many ways. But, you know, the essential argument there is it is better to have them than not to have them. Not to have the African Union. What would you have in Africa? I certainly think there's many, many, many improvements. But the African Union, as compared to the Organization of African Unity, that club of presidents that never would criticize one another, it has improved. Lot of room for improvements. But to get back to Malawi, what an interesting story. This is in Oman. In this particular case, something like 20 of them were rescued. But this particular woman ran a small business in Malawi, and they came to her and said, you can do a whole lot better. If you become a taxi driver in Oman, you can do a whole lot better. why don't you come over? And of course, she grasped the opportunity, but she was made to become a maid, and she was working sometimes for 20 hours a day. And then her boss came along and started raping her. Jesus. And I mean, she finally had no way out of this, and she just was absolutely desperate. She went onto Facebook, and believe it or not, a compatriot, a fellow Malawian living in New Hampshire in the United States, got onto the BBC, and the BBC in turn, they've got some muscle in this regard, and they came out and they've effectively rescued her and about 20 others. But what we're waiting for, Jack, what we're waiting for is some kind of retribution for the Omanis. I'd like to see prosecutions there, because we're hearing stories of this, and there are many countries, I do believe it's Ethiopia is one of them, saying you can't go and work in those countries. You're not allowed to work in the Arab countries. Say to their citizens, it's just too hazardous, and we can't rescue you all the time.
JJ, I mean, it's an interesting thing, and we're running out of time here, but it's worth remarking on the fact that there is more slavery going on today in the world than there was in the 1800s. And much of that is happening in the intersection of the Arab world and the African world. And it's something that's very uncomfortable for all these multilateral organizations to deal with, because it requires arguments over sovereignty, over what happens to citizens of other countries once they are found in countries that are not the ones that they come from. And we know that there are parts of the world like Oman where, you know, you could basically be put into slavery, sex slavery, or worse things, and if there is something worse, but otherwise the kind of forced indentured labor that we would have expected to be a part of our history. How much of this have you encountered, especially because you've just been to North Africa?
Well, I mean, I haven't seen the awful side of it, because you wouldn't be. These are people locked away. But I know when I went to Kuwait and I went out for a walk, and please excuse me, I went out for a walk, and there were just thousands of people around. It was a Sunday evening. And these were thousands of, again, Ethiopians and people from the continent, some from Sri Lanka, India, and so on, all working there, doing all the jobs. Now, of course, if you live in Kuwait, you don't do any work at all. As you attain adulthood, they give you a home. If you get married, you get further rewarded. For every child, you get rewarded. And then you do the labor that you don't mind doing, because people do the menial work. But there are thousands upon thousands of them doing that. And, you know, I went to speak to some of them, and they'd just been to church. And the only recreation they get all week is for an hour or two after church on Sunday night, that they can meet with other people. But for the rest, they said the situation is very grim. And we know with the World Cup, Football World Cup, the people building the stadia were actually worked in the heat, and many of them actually died. So there's an indifference, not to say absolute outright cruelty, towards workers in the Arab world.
Yeah, it's definitely not a simple and binary system, and we have lots to work out still about the way that our continent is interacting with the rest of the world. And I think Africa is still, we've got some way to go to assert ourselves in some respects, even if it is, and I know Jack was, he's trying to bait me into having an argument with you about multilateralism, but we won't do that today. We will not. I resolutely refuse to get into an argument with JJ Cornish. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your time. Yes?
Thank you. I can't see Jack's forearms, but I'd challenge him to an arm wrestle. But, I don't know. Does he have tattoos, or does he have spelling errors on his tattoos?
No, not at all. As an olive branch, JJ, just so you know, I'm small enough to fit in your carry-on. So the next time you travel somewhere and you want to educate me even further, just give me a shout.
Just be careful they don't think that he's trafficking you as a slave. That's all. You don't want that. JJ Cornish, enjoy your time with your daughter and grandchildren, and we will speak to you in another 2 weeks' time on African Analysis. Thank you very much.
Looking forward to it. All the best.
Thank you, JJ. All right, so much more to get to, but that, of course, is African Analysis, brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, and we will have more from JJ Cornish in a couple of days' time.
Yep.
Coming up, Democracy 101. And we get to grips with the questions of what our roles are in terms of responsibilities and rights in a democratic society. What should we be doing as ordinary citizens?
Yep.
These are the questions that maybe you aren't in a hurry to answer because it means you're going to have to do some of the work.
Yeah.
And to help us figure this out, none other than our own wise elder, Muzikozwayo, will be joining us. Stick around. That and a whole lot more on the way. CliffCentral.com. It is Tuesday, the 19th of March.